Please stand by. We're about to begin. Good day, everyone, and welcome to the IBM Informix Dynamic Server 9.4 Time to Upgrade conference call. Today's call is being recorded. If you have not received today's PowerPoint presentation, please email Linda Spina at lspina@us.ibm.com. For opening remarks and introductions, I'd like to turn the call over to Jerry Kazee, Director of IBM Informix Database Development. Jerry, please go ahead.
Thanks, Steve. Good morning, everybody. If you're in North America, and for those of you who are in Europe, good afternoon. I really am pleased to introduce the session today. This is our second chat with the lab focused on the Informix products, and I think it's a great outreach program to provide you with access to members of our lab to get information about future directions, to get information about specific features in the product, and to get some of your questions addressed by members of my team. Today's topic is one of my favorites. It's IBM Informix Dynamic Server 9.4, Time to Upgrade. We released 9.4 about a year and a half ago in March of 2003. And I can tell you that when we sat down and we started planning 9.4, you know, our goal was to define a release that customers who were running on version 7 would look at and say, you know, that is the release that I should be running my business on. No, we wanted to eliminate any issue, any obstacle, any barrier that any of our partners and customers had with respect to migrating from version 7 to version 9. And naturally, we also wanted to make sure that any of our customers who had already migrated to version 9 would look at the release and come to the same conclusion that's where they needed to be running their enterprise. So we focused on what I would call the basic principles of the Informix Dynamic Server, and that's performance, reliability, availability, scalability, and quality. And the team spent a year and a half working on the release. And when we shipped it in March of 2003, we were confident that we had met all of our goals. And over the last year and a half, we've gotten a tremendous amount of feedback. We've met personally with a number of partners and customers, and the response has really been positive. Last month, we were at the tech conference in Las Vegas, and it was really a great experience to have, customers and partners unsolicited come up and tell you what a great release they thought that 9.4 was. So that will be the focus of today's session. Now, there will be additional chat with the labs coming in the future where we'll focus on other topics and certainly give you some insight into future directions of the product as well. So what I'd like to do at this point is turn the call over to Jonathan Leffler. Jonathan is one of our architects focused on the Informix technology. He's also an STSM, a senior technical staff member here at IBM, and he will take you through the presentation.
Thank you, Jerry. Okay, I hope everybody has the presentation up in front of them. There are two title slides. The first one was entitled Informix Chat with the Lab. The second one is entitled IBM Informix Dynamic Server 9.4.0, Time to Upgrade. I'm now going to move on through the presentation, and I'll try and remember to say each time which slide number I'm on. If you move to slide number 2, the agenda slide, you'll find that there's a number at the bottom left corner. I'll be calling out those numbers as I change the slides. What I'm going to be talking about today are a little bit of a general background, and then talking about the key new features in IDS 9.40, and also to some extent features that appeared in 9.2 and 9.3, which in particular customers who are currently running on IDS 7.3.1 won't necessarily be aware of, to explain why we think 9 product is so much better than the 7 product and why we think you should be on version 9.4. There will then be a collection of miscellaneous features that we put into the product, a little bit of discussion about the upgrade and reversion process, a very brief chat about application features as opposed to server features, and then we'll conclude the call with some question and answer session. So at some point during the call, you will need to think about any questions that you have. Moving on to slide 3. When IBM bought Informix, we had to work out how we were going to develop the products in the future. And there are a number of areas that we have concentrated on. Performance, availability, and scalability are always very important. Improving the manageability of the product, making it easier for you to develop applications for or that run against Informix Dynamic Server, working with the rest of the IBM product suite, and in particular things like stability. We have concentrated very hard on making sure that the servers remain stable, very, very high quality database system. Moving on to slide 4. IBM actually took over Informix in July 2001. We released version 9.3 in 2001 September. The current fixed pack version of that, I believe, is 9.3.0.UC8 and not released in January, but about March. Bother. 9.4.0 was released in February 2003. The current fixed pack is 9.4.0.UC5. That was released a week or so ago. The next version of IDS 9 will be 9.5.0. We expect to release that in the first quarter of next year, 2005. And we've started planning for the next release of the product. The release date, somewhere probably in the second half of 2006, is a plausible guess. Moving to slide 5. IBM Dynamics Server 7.3.1 is still a very stable product. It was introduced in 98, or the 7.3.0 version was introduced in 98, 7.3.1 in 99. 7.3.1 UD8 was released in March of this year. If you're not up on UD7 or UD8, you should probably be thinking very seriously about upgrading to that level. We have recently announced continued support for IDS 7.3.1, which will extend through 2009. There won't be new features in the product. We're not expecting to put new features in at all, but we will do bug fixes, and we will upgrade platforms as necessary. Moving to slide 6. And this is where we start looking at the feature enhancements in IDS 9.4. Slide 7. The 5 major features I'm going to talk about are big chunks, coexistence of HDR and ER, encrypted communications, performance, and dynamic locks and logs. Moving to slide 8. Big chunks. As most of you are probably well aware, disk sizes have grown enormously over the last decade, 2 decades, and the original chunk size limit of 2 gigabytes, which seemed totally enormous back in the late 80s, was becoming very painful to manage by even the mid-90s. Or late 90s anyway. And that meant that if you had a huge database, you were having to manage hundreds, if not thousands, of 2 gigabyte chunks, even though the disk drives themselves were, you know, many fewer in number, because they were 36 gigabytes, 70 gigabytes, 80 gigabytes, whatever the number is. The limit was just getting so painful that we had to remove it. And in IDS 9.40, each chunk can be up to 4 terabytes big. Now, if you're really clued up, you would know that previously the size of a database, entire instance, was 4 terabytes. Now, a single chunk can be as big as the entire instance in the previous release. Further, an instance can have 32K of chunks. The total size on a new IDS instance is about 128 petabytes. How big is 128 petabytes? It's big. First of all, you need 500,000 250 gigabyte drives to do it. That would cost $60 million, give or take. Probably get a discount. You might get it down a bit under that. And that price is dropping rapidly. When I first put this presentation together two years ago, the number for the cost of the drives was a lot bigger, up in the billion-dollar range. So disk drive technology is still staggering in the way it's improving and the way the cost is dropping. At a load rate of about a gigabyte a minute, which in my opinion is a fairly fast rate, it would take over 250 years to fill 128 petabytes of disk data. There's some ifs and buts in there, of course, but that's an indication of how vast the 128 petabytes is. It's very big. Moving to slide 9. When we added big chunks, obviously we had to do a good deal of other work behind the scenes. All the chunk sizes and the offsets are now 64-bit values, and all our utilities had to be compiled to handle large files. So now DB export, DB import, DB load, DB access, all the onload and on spaces, on tape, backup utilities all handle large files so that you are no longer constrained to the 2 gigabyte limit, subject to your operating system and the file system that you're running on not having the limit. If your file system won't make files bigger than 2 gigabytes, I'm sorry, we can't create files bigger than 2 gigabytes for you on that file system. So big chunks is primarily a ease of administration feature, but it also increases the capacity of IDS enormously. It's an ease of administration feature because it means you are handling fewer but bigger chunks of data, and there is just less to worry about. Moving on to slide number 10, ER and HDR coexistence. In all versions of IDS prior to 9.40, you could either use HDR, or high availability data replication, to provide you with automatic failover replication of two database systems. HDR can only run between two systems that are substantially identical to each other. They have to be running on the same type of hardware. They have to be running the same operating system. They need to be running the same IDS binary. And as such, it's a valuable system. It allows you to fail over. You have a secondary system which can be used for reporting work, read-only queries, and there is the failover. So if the primary goes down, the secondary can take over and become the operational database server while you're fixing up the primary that's gone down. There's a second replication system, which is ER, enterprise replication. Contrast between ER and HDR is two key features. First of all, ER allows you to control exactly what data is replicated. With HDR, you get the database is replicated exactly. All the information that goes through the log files is transferred to the HDR secondary, and the whole database is replicated. With ER, you can actually control exactly which data is replicated. It need not be everything that is in the database. The other big difference between ER and HDR is that ER permits heterogeneous systems. You don't even have to have the same version of IDS on all the machines. But the big trouble with ER and HDR prior to 9.40 was you could not have an HDR pair working as part of an ER system. You can't use both at once. Moving to slide 11. From IDS 9.40, HDR systems can participate as a node in an ER system. So an ER network of replicating systems, some of the nodes in that can be themselves HDR pairs. Typically, therefore, you'd have some of the root nodes, the key nodes in the ER system, would be HDR pairs, so that if one of those goes down, the HDR pair goes down, the other one can take over. In an ER system where you have HDR running, all the nodes communicating with the HDR pair must be running IDS 9.40. It's just a rule. So all the root nodes would normally have to be running IDS 9.40 before you can use HDR as one of the root nodes, because root nodes are all completely interconnected. When ER systems are running, they will normally be contacting the HDR primary server, just like every other application contacts the HDR primary server, but the ER systems will automatically contact the secondary if the primary fails. So the key message here is that you can actually now have failover replication on individual nodes within an ER network. So you have vastly improved reliability of your overall ER system. Moving to slide 12. Both ER and HDR have had numerous other improvements made to them between 9.2 and 9.3 and version 9.4. HDR now supports various extensible data types. Extensible data types are part of IDS 9 in contrast to version 7.3. And HDR can now replicate extensible data and logged data types, smart large objects, Boolean, LVARCHAR, various complex types. It can do a better job on handling the more advanced features of IDS 9.x. ER also supports extensible data types. In version 9.3 of IDS, we modified the way that ER works during queue recovery, which is when it's applying transactions as they're being replicated. And it is much, much faster than it was in 9.20. So that was a feature of 9.30 rather than 9.40. If you're already on 9.30, you already have the faster recovery stuff. Another feature which I'll talk about a little bit more later is called dynamic logs. And ER can now use the dynamic logs feature of IDS 9.30 to help it with its work. Another small item, you can now get identify ER events when they appear in your log files and in the messages sent to the alarm program. So ER and HDR have had a lot of work done on them over the course of the 9.x development, and it is a very functional, powerful system, and ER and HDR can now be used together, working together, which is a valuable step for many, many people. Moving on to slide 13. Another feature that we added in IDS 9.40 is encrypted communications. Prior to 9.4, there was a module called the Simple Password Encryption module, which allowed you to encrypt the password and only the password that was sent from the client to the server as you did a connection. But from IDS 9.40 onwards, you can encrypt all conversations between the client and the server. It uses a piece of technology known as CSS-CSM, Communication Support Services, Communication Support Modules, and is based on the cryptography part of the package called OpenSSL. SSL is the secure sockets layer. We actually don't use the socket management part of OpenSSL, because of the way that we our Association Services Facility, or ASF, is designed. But we do use the cryptography libraries directly from that package, so we're using someone else's cryptography libraries. We did not invent our own. If you're into cryptography, you know that this is actually a good thing. Cryptography is a very difficult area to get right, and people like the developers of OpenSSL spend a good deal of time making sure they do get it right. When you want to encrypt all the communications between client and server, you have to configure that via the SQL host file. There are special options that you put in the options field, the fifth field of the SQL host file, and you have to do this on both the client and the server. Obviously, encrypting communications is something that is done over a network. We do not encrypt local communications. There are no plans to encrypt data in shared memory for shared memory connections between a local client and the server. There are no plans to encrypt memory data sent over an IPC stream connection. One thing to realize is that encryption is a moderately costly process. That is, it takes CPU power to encrypt data for sending to the server. It takes CPU power to decrypt the data on the server, and it takes CPU power to encrypt the data before sending it back to the client and decrypting it again on the client. This is inherent in encryption. It takes CPU power to do it. Client side, generally not a problem. It's a big PC, 1 gigahertz, 2 gigahertz, 3 gigahertz, whatever. It can do it. It's fine. But the workload on the database server is not negligible. You need to do it under carefully. You will not be encrypting every communication, usually. This is okay. Normally, you'll hide your database system behind firewalls. You don't expose it directly to the internet. But the option is there. You can use it. You can configure it. And so if you need it, it is available. Note that you can also encrypt ER traffic. ER data is often sent on long-haul networks. It might be that you're replicating between the United States and Britain and Singapore or Australia or something. So you actually have three systems scattered right around the world, and that's definitely long-haul network. ER data can be encrypted so that even as it goes over the internet, the data is protected from casual snooping, in fact, even fairly serious snooping. The ER or encryption is not available with HDR in 9.4. So encrypted communications is a valuable feature to be added in 9.4. Another good reason to upgrade to 9.4. Moving to slide 14. One of the main features we concentrated on, or main goals of IDS 940 was to ensure that the performance of the server was actually better than IDS 7.3. And during the development of IDS 940, we had performance testing of most nightly builds, and any time a performance issue showed up, we aggressively tracked down the source of the problem and worked on fixing any problems that arose. And we were able to measure performance drops as small as 1%. And then react to those. Our internal benchmarking of IDS 940 shows that we are getting 8 to 15% improvement over 7.3x. For reference, 9.30 was pretty much the same performance as IDS 7.31. So we are now confident that IDS 940 in general outperforms IDS 7.31. We do those measurements using a variety of different benchmarks. We use a modified TPCC benchmark. It's not fully scaled, so the result would not be an auditable result, but it is based on that stuff. We also use several vendor benchmarks. So we are very happy with the performance of the database server. There are a number of things that we did to actually help with that, and the next couple of slides go through some of these items. So I'm moving now to slide 15. In IDS 7.31, users sometimes have trouble with long checkpoints. Actually, I think users elsewhere have that too, but it certainly can be a problem. IDS 9.20 introduced fuzzy checkpoints. A fuzzy checkpoint is an interesting concept. A hard checkpoint or a non-fuzzy checkpoint is a point at which you know all the data in memory matches exactly the data on disk. All the dirty pages in memory are flushed out to disk. A fuzzy checkpoint doesn't do that every single checkpoint. It leaves some dirty pages in memory. But there are rules to make sure that no page is more than one checkpoint behind. We have write-ahead logging, which makes sure that the data is consistent. And what that fuzzy checkpoint does is, because we don't have to write all the dirty pages out, it allows larger buffer pools to be used without impacting the performance of the system. There are other ways in which we also improve the performance of large buffer pools, and I'll come on to that in a few slides. IDS 940 also does update statistics faster than IDS 7.31 did. It has better use of memory. One of the issues with IDS was there was a gap. It could allocate up to about 4 megabytes of memory, or it could allocate over 100 megabytes of memory, but in between that, it didn't do any memory allocation. And using only 4 megabytes of memory meant that the performance was not all that great. Using lots of memory had other implications. And now in IDS 940, we can actually use memory sizes continuously in the range from 4 megabytes up to 100 megabytes and beyond as required. Another item that we do is now we do light scan. So rather than polluting the main buffer pool with all the data that we're reading during update statistics, we use light scans to avoid the buffer pool. That's fine. Where you're doing statistical work, it really doesn't matter if we're off by one or two in counting up the statistics. They're only statistics after all. And another big change is that update statistics can run in parallel on fragmented tables and indexes in 9.4. So update statistics runs faster and imposes less load on your system. So it's something you can do more often. Moving on to slide number 16, which for some reason doesn't have a slide number on it. Another feature is the shared statements cache. Basically, this allows the database server to keep a cache of the prepared statement plan for SQL statements. So when a statement comes in from an application, we look to see whether the statement is already available in the cache. And if it is, then we can use that cached query plan rather than having to re-optimize the entire query from scratch each time. Obviously, there are some issues that we have to deal with every time, like security checking. User A may be allowed to do things that user B is not, but that's okay. That's what the query cache can be deals with that. But if you have a single application or a small set of applications that are running, and they're running the same SQL statements very frequently, then the shared statement cache gives you a lot of benefit. This is a feature that was introduced in IDS 9.2. Moving on to slide 17. Two more features that appeared in IDS 9.20 and 9.30 this time, dynamic locks and dynamic logs. Hands up if you've ever run out of locks on your system. Okay, I can't actually see the hands. Never mind. Prior to IDS 9.20, running out of locks is bad news. It would jam up your system, transactions would fail, etc. With IDS 9.20 and above, the server can dynamically add locks if the lock table overflows. This prevents application hanging up and doing nothing for a while. So there's a very simple mechanism, well, fairly simple mechanism, that actually appears simple to you guys, that improves the availability of the server. The server doesn't go out of business on you when you run out of the configured number of locks. You can actually adjust the number of locks permanently as well with the server online. An extension of this was the dynamic logs. In versions prior to IDS 9.30, if you ever ran out of space in the logical logs, it was a catastrophic. And we had two on-config parameters, LTXHWM and LTXEHWM, which had to be set low enough that you were confident that any transaction could be rolled back in the space that was left in the logical logs. The issues were, there were many problems here, and if you were not careful and you actually did run out of logical logs, your server would jam up, and that was a serious maintenance problem. From IDS 9.30 onwards, you can configure the server so that it will dynamically add extra logical logs as necessary. This means you do not run out of logical logs anymore. And the server will automatically use those dynamically added logs. So we've actually made a lot of changes in the way logical logs are handled. You don't have to do archives before you can use logical logs and things like that, which used to be necessary. There are some fairly complex rules about where the server adds logical logs. The idea is that new logical logs should be associated with the same disk space as any other logical logs, and that's all good stuff and very detailed, but I probably don't have time to go through all that now. So adding logical logs automatically means that the system again stays up longer, it takes a much longer to crash the server, and long transactions still can occur. If the transaction is one that starts in the oldest logical log and you reach the last logical log but one, and it's still going, then the transaction will be aborted just as it always was. But the difference is the rollback will succeed, and you will not have the server hung up with a long transaction because logical logs will be added until the rollback is complete. So the LTX parameters can be adjusted to higher values. Over and above the stuff I've talked about, there are a number of miscellaneous features that were added to the database server. I'm now looking at slide 18, which is basically a bullet list of a number of different features that we added into IDS 940. I think all of those are 9.40 features. So I'm going to talk about those features in the next few slides. Moving to slide 19. We have rewritten the way that the B-trees get cleaned. B-tree cleaning is an interesting, complicated process. Basically, when you delete records from an index, we need to clean up the B-tree that used to contain B-tree index to get rid of the records from within the B-tree. And that can have implications for locking pages and so on. And prior to IDS 940, we had a single-threaded B-tree cleaner process, or thread, that would go and clean up B-trees without impacting other processes that were accessing the index. But the trouble was that the B-tree cleaner could get overwhelmed by the amount of work it had to do, partly because it was a single-threaded process. In IDS 940, we've replaced the B-tree cleaner with the B-tree scanner. The B-tree scanner is a great improvement over the B-tree cleaner because it has a prioritized workload, so we actually have different ways of controlling it and giving it priority and so on, and because multiple scanner threads are possible. There are various algorithms available, and there are two programs that use to control it. One of them is the on mode with -C option, and then various sub options after it. And you can monitor it using onstat with a -C option again, and again various options afterwards. The, as I said, B-tree scanner is tunable. By default, the B-tree scanner threads run at low priority. And if you find that the B-tree scanner threads are falling behind, you by monitoring it, the performance, you can actually set them up to a higher priority so that they will actually keep up with or and overtake the amount of work. And then once they've caught up with the work, you can set them back down to a low priority. Generally speaking, you don't do too much with low priority cleaner threads. If they're keeping up with the work, it's great. If they're falling behind, then you worry about increasing the number of threads that you have and increasing their priority. So the B-tree scanner is another performance benefit. Primarily, it means that your indexes are kept much more clean, and there is a better control over the way in which the B-tree cleaning is done. Another problem that some people found was with the way that the buffer manager worked, and this is now slide 20. Prior to IDS 940, the buffer manager would give priority to memory resident tables and index pages in the shared memory buffer pool, and you could occasionally end up with the buffer pool saturated with index pages or memory resident tables, and it's very difficult for ordinary data pages to get any place in the buffer pool. We also had a very complex four-tier priority system with high priority, medium high, medium low, and low priority pages and various other things. The whole buffer manager has been revised, simplified, and streamlined for IDS 940. There are now just two priority categories instead of four priority categories. There's a high category buffers and a low priority buffers. The high ones are managed by a FIFO queue, first in, first out. The low priority buffers are managed by LRU queues, least recently used queues. The idea here is that the high priority ones, buffers are quickly handled, and it means that the high priority buffers are readily available. They're most frequently used pages by definition, and that is what makes them high priority. The classification of buffer priority is dynamic. Each checkpoint, between checkpoints, we reset the categorization, and the categorization is based solely on the observed access frequencies, i.e., we keep a track of how often these pages are accessed, and they move between low and high based on how frequently they are accessed. Not just because they were an index page, but how frequently that index page was used, or if it's a data page, how frequently the data page is used. Additionally, the size of the high priority band is fixed. You can control it so that the high priority buffers do not consume the entire buffer pool. And the default ratio is something like 25% to 75%. Moving on to slide 21, another change that we introduced in 940 is the ability to use fractional percentages for LRU min dirty and LRU max dirty. You're probably aware in earlier versions of IDS, the minimum values you could set the LRU min dirty and max dirty parameters to were integer values, and some people actually use 1 and 0, so they have the maximum dirty of 1% and a minimum dirty of 0. But that's a pretty bad system to use, and 2, 1 was the smallest values that were sanctioned by Informix. What that means is that when 2% of your buffers are dirty, we will start cleaning up and writing to disk, and we will stop writing when 1% of the buffers are dirty. If you have only 300,000 buffers, then that means that LRU writes would start at where you've got 6,000 buffers to write out, and it would stop after writing out about 3,000 dirty buffers. At a checkpoint, you have a maximum of about 6,000 buffers that need to be cleaned out. Obviously, fuzzy checkpoints factor in here because some of those 6,000 buffers would not need to be written out because of fuzzy checkpoints, but 6,000 is a maximum. With the new fractional percentages, you can actually use values less than 1%. For example, you could have 0.5 and 0.1%. So that the LRU writes would start when you've got 1,500 dirty buffers and stop when you've got only 300 buffers if you have the buffer pool of 300,000. Checkpoint has a maximum of 1,500 buffers to write. This is considerably better, i.e. less data to be written at the checkpoint time, and therefore checkpoints are quicker. So these two parameters being fractional percentages helps you to minimize checkpoint times. And the downside of that is it increases the number of writes between checkpoints, which are wasted in inverted commas if a crash occurs, or if the page is updated again between the checkpoint. But it decreases the number of writes at checkpoints, so there is less of a hit, less of a pause as the checkpoint occurs. So fractional percentages plus the fuzzy checkpoints help you to reduce your checkpoint time. There's another technique you can use, which is the special on-mode parameter minus capital B, which forces a flush of the checkpoint of all the buffers in the dirty, all the dirty buffers in the buffer pool. And if you run that before you run the checkpoint, that can also help you decrease your checkpoint time. One of the things that we have to bear in mind is that in the next year or two, it will be possible to have 1 terabyte size database, main memory database systems, 64-bit obviously, and then you will have not hundreds of thousands of buffers, but millions of buffers, and at that point, fractional percentages become really important. Okay. Moving on to slide 22. Another feature that we added in IDS 940 is the ability to specify, that you should use the entire tape. You actually do it by saying that tape size is zero, so you'll sometimes hear this referred to as tape size zero feature. In older versions of IDS, you have to specify the actual size of tape, and this can be difficult to predict, especially if your tape drive has compression built into it. If you estimate that the tape will hold more than it actually can hold, then you get an error during the backup. And if you estimate conservatively, then you're wasting space on your tape drive. With IDS 940, specifying a tape size of zero means right until there's no more room left on the tape or disk, which means you don't have to guess how much compression you'll get. You can even use different size tapes at different times during the backup. There are a large number of utilities that were changed to handle this, DB export, DB import, etc. The onload, on-unload, and the on-tape command were all modified to use this feature. Moving to slide 23. Another feature that helps with the management of database systems is the ability to rename chunks during restore. It's basically a way of mapping chunk device names during a cold restore. You can remap all the chunk device names. You can do it specifying the mapping in either the command line or in a file. Both primary and mirror chunks can be renamed. There are a number of advantages to this. It allows you to do recovery of your database on similar but not identical systems. Obviously, if you have symlink for your device names, then that's not too much of a problem. But if you have got people who have used actual hard device names, /dev/rdisk/something, then dealing with replacement drives after disk crash or moving to a second machine, which is not identical but is equivalent to your current machine, it was hard, and now you can actually fix these problems up. Another problem can be someone accidentally used a version of IDS in the part of the path name. So we actually had someone who had a path name /ifmx/v713 for version 7.13 of IDS. That's quite an old version, in case you didn't know. And they were actually running IDS 9.x on that, because they had a smart blob space, and smart blob spaces are IDS 9 feature. It does permit you to use direct device names instead of symbolic links. Still not recommended. Use the symbolic link. It makes life easier, because a cold restore is not exactly an easy operation. But being able to rename the chunks during the restore does make it easier, possible even, to recover on new systems. After you have done your restore, don't forget to do a level zero archive, so that when your next need to, if you need to recover again, you'll be recovering to the correct names rather than having to redo the mapped restore. Moving to slide 24, another improvement in 9.4 is that we no longer install any libraries under /userlib. In older versions of the product, you would find libraries like ipldd09a.so as a symlink in userlib, pointing to the corresponding file underneath $informixter. There is one exception to this, which is on HP, and there's a Java run formix in a subdirectory. That one we can't get rid of. It's a weirdness on HPUX. But the other libraries are no longer in /user/lib. There are new onconfig parameters to support them, so if you're using optical, there's an optical lib path in the onconfig file. If you're using HPL, the dynamic lib path is in the PL config file, the high performance loader config file. The onbar library used with is specified by the XBSA library path parameter in onconfig. Something else which happened in 940 is we removed support for smart disks. We hadn't found a customer using them. No one shouted yet. We don't think that was a problem.
one of the advantages of this is it simplifies the uninstall of IDS. It also gives you better isolation of different versions of IDS if you have multiple versions of IDS installed on a single machine. One thing to do is to remember to clean up the old Informix libraries after you've installed 9.40 and you no longer need the old libraries that are kicking around in /userlib. Moving to slide 25. Another feature that we added in IDS 940 is the ability to add chunks even when there is no space left in the first chunk of the root DB space. Before IDS 940, all the chunk information had to be in the first chunk of the root DB space, and if the first chunk was full, it was not possible to add new disk space, and this was problematic. From IDS 940 onwards, if there's no space left in the first chunk of the root DB space, then extra chunk information can be added to other chunks in the root DB space. It still has to be stored in the root DB space, it just doesn't have to be in the first chunk of the root DB space. One of the reasons for this is it helps prevent conversion failures during the upgrade from an earlier version of IDS to 9.40. More particularly, since we were multiplying by 16 the number of chunks that you could have, it was not reasonable to make you have that enough space for all of those chunks in the first chunk of the root DB space. So this is just, again, a usability feature. It makes life that much easier for you. There's less pain and restrictions on what you're doing when the chunks are being added. Slide number 26. Another thing that we added with IDS 940 is restartable fast recovery. If your system crashed during fast recovery, it could sometimes corrupt the system and no further fast recovery was possible, so that you had to restore from an archive, which is pretty painful. With IDS 940, we've enabled physical logging during fast recovery, which means that we can recover multiple times if that's necessary. One interesting side effect of this is that the physical log can overflow during recovery, and we then need to add extra disk space to the system so that we can store physical log information so that we can do the restartable fast recoverability reliably. There's an extra parameter in the onconfig file which specifies where overflow files go, and the default location is informix.tmp. That's a directory, and it will be created if you need it, if you need it to be created. It doesn't exist. However, I strongly recommend you create it yourselves manually, because the permissions on the default one are not reliable in IDS 940 and below. Actually, they're fixed. I'm pretty sure it's fixed in the UC5, probably the UC4 version, but earlier versions, it's not. So it's a good idea to create the $informix.tmp directory yourself and set the permissions on it appropriately, and that means 770 informix. I'm moving now to slide 27, some considerations to make during upgrades. Obviously, if you're moving from version 7.3.1 to 9.40, there are new reserved words. That almost always happens. Most of these will be transparent to you most of the time. There's one which sometimes has caused problem is ref. If you have columns called ref, that can sometimes cause trouble. IDS 940 supports direct migrations from IDS 7.24, 7.30, 7.31, and all the current or semi-current 9.x versions. If you're using anything older than 9.14, you have got serious problems. If you're using an old, really old version of IDS 7.2x, you have to go through an interim upgrade to IDS 7.31. Anything else requires DB export, DB import, or equivalent processes. You can migrate between a 32-bit and 64-bit version of IDS, basically in the same way you do migrating between two 32-bit versions or between two 64-bit versions. If you're moving between operating systems, for sake of argument between Solaris and AIX, then you have to do export and import. IDS 940 does need more space than previous versions in the root chunk. I'm on slide 28 at this point. It needs about 10% space free. You need quite a lot of space in the logical log to rebuild the SysMaster database. You need more space available to expand DB spaces. So you want to make sure you have enough space available before you do your upgrades. You also want your both the physical log and your logical log need to be bigger in 9.4 than they did in earlier versions, especially compared with 7.31. If you're running with a minimal logical log size or minimal physical log, you should upgrade, extend the, or increase the size of your logical log, physical log, before you do the upgrade. There is an option to on-check, which is the minus ME merge extents option, and that can be useful on the 7.3 systems to compress space and free up space on some of your disks. The upgrade process is actually very much the same as ever, and I'm going to run through this rather fast because otherwise I'm going to run out of time. But basically, you need to make sure you've got copies of your configuration files. You shut down your old server. Well, actually, no, you probably install the new software first in the new Informixter. You then close down your old server, make sure everything is clean. You do your last backup, and I'm probably now on slide 30. You then might make any modifications to the system kernel if that's necessary. You bring up the server underneath the new system and run update statistics, etc. You make your level zero archive on the new system. You tune the system. You worry about things like HDR and ER during the conversion process. There are really very few surprises in the process. It's very much the same as before. And for many systems, it's a question of you simply take down the old system, change the Informixter or change the symbolic link so that instead of pointing at the old 9.30 server, say, it now points to the 9.40 server. You bring up the system under the new server and off you go. Everything is ready to run. The next slide is slide number 32. It's actually, for most purposes, the last slide. And basically, this is a list of features that are visible on the application side of the game. Describe input means that you can actually get from your application, you can actually find out about the input parameters to SQL statements. The order by statement that no longer has to have the values that are in the select list. This is a feature that other database systems have had for a while. SQL standard still doesn't require it, but everybody else does it. It's not that hard to do. We've added sequence objects. These are similar to the sequences in DB2 and Oracle. There's triggers on views, so you can actually do instead of trigger for an insert, update, or delete on a view. So instead of actually deleting through the view proper, you have a trigger that is executed instead of the update statement or the delete statement, and it can do whatever you need it to do. There are various improvements in the SQL. You have names for return values from stored procedures, so instead of getting just expression out, you can actually get a name for the return values, which helps with application programming. You can actually find out what the names of the return values are, and you can distinguish between them. And there are a whole bunch of other features there. So, and one of the major benefits of joining IBM has been that we've actually been able to use the IBM Unicode support in IDS. There's a product called International Components for Unicode, which is available from IBM as open source, and we are using that to support our Unicode collations and sorting and locales and so on in IDS 940. Okay, that about runs through my part of the presentation. this point, I'm going to hand over back to the operator. You should be thinking about your questions. The operator will conduct a quick poll and will then hand over to the question and answer session. I'll be joined in the question and answer session by Christine Normile, who is the Informix market manager for the Informix product. So, back to the operator, please.
Thank you. At this time, we will conduct a brief electronic survey. After I finish reading the entire question and all of the possible responses, please answer by firmly pressing the star key, followed by the number on your touch-tone phone that corresponds to your choice. If you are using a speakerphone, please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. There will be a brief pause between each question to allow everyone a chance to respond. We have six questions. Question one, if you are currently using any version of IDS version 7, please press star 1. Again, if you are currently using any version of IDS version 7, please press star 1. Question 2. If you are currently using a version of IDS 9 earlier than version 9.4, press star 1. Again, if you are currently using a version of IDS 9 earlier than version 9.4, please press star 1. Question 3. The level of technical detail in this presentation was press star 1 for about right, star 2 not technical enough, star 3 too technical. Again, the level of technical detail in this presentation was star 1 about right, star 2 not technical enough, star 3 too technical. Question 4, the presentation materials for this teleconference were at the appropriate level. Press star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, star 4 for poor. Again, the presentation materials for this teleconference were at the appropriate level. Star 1, excellent, star 2, good, star 3, fair, star 4, poor. Question 5, the presenter led the teleconference at the appropriate level. Press star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, star 4 for poor. Again, the presenter led the teleconference at the appropriate level. Star 1, excellent, star 2, good, star 3, fair, star 4, poor. And question 6, overall teleconference rating. Press star 1 for excellent, star 2 for good, star 3 for fair, and star 4 for poor. Again, the overall teleconference rating, press star 1 excellent, star 2 good, star 3 fair, star 4 poor. Now we'll move into the question and answer portion. To ask a question, press the star key followed by the digit 1 on your touchtone telephone. Please make sure your mute function is turned off to allow your signal to reach our equipment. Again, star 1 for questions or comments. We'll go first to John Carlson with the Home Depot.
Yes, this question has to do with handling the way big chunks are handled now. Have there been any modifications made to cleaners or the cleaner threads to be able to handle a bigger chunk on a write?
Okay. So the question is, do big chunks or do the cleaner threads handle big chunks sensibly?
Correct.
The answer is there are not many changes needed or necessary because the way that cleaners work is they assume that chunks are on each chunk is on a separate device and it queues the reads and or the writes for a chunk in order of address so that the process is as slick as possible. You're sequentially scanning through the chunk. Now, the advantage of big chunks over multiple small chunks is that you don't have the disk heads being hammered because writer number one is writing to the first part of the chunk, and writer number two is writing to the second part of the disk, and writer number three is writing to the third part of the disk. So because you have fewer chunks and each chunk is more closely approximating the actual disk, physical disk, than the logical disk structure, you should actually get improved performance on that. You do need to worry a little bit about how many cleaners you have, but just simply using big chunks probably gives you better performance. Not sure. Does that answer your question?
Oh, yes, it did, Jonathan. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll go next to Chuck Kirby, E-Star Information Technologies.
Hey, guys. I'm curious. We're trying to do an upgrade for a client for our next big project, and I'm wondering if we can get – we've got an H80 with AIX on it running 7.3 now. Could we install 9.4 and have those coexist on the same box?
In general terms, yes. I don't recognize the model numbers, but unless there's a problem like you're using an old, really old version of AIX, if you're using AIX 5.1 or 5.2, then yes, you can obviously have two servers coexisting on a single system. Clearly, the disk drives have to be, or space on the disk has to be allocated uniquely to either 7.3.1 or 9.40. You can't have it being used simultaneously by both 7.3.1 and 9.40. But subject to that, yes, you can have two servers running on the same system.
Great.
I currently have four different versions running on my machine.
Okay, good. And can they actually talk to each other, like if I wanted to start a transaction in one and have them read across, or are they going to be independent connections we'll have to maintain to each?
Okay. You have the iStar facility for distributed database operations. And so, yes, you subject to restrictions that are present already in 7.3.1 and the databases you're talking to have the same logging level, so they're both log databases or both Mode ANSI databases or, Paris of thought, both unlogged databases, yes, you can have a transaction running with two-phase commit between 7.3.1 and 9.40.
Great. Appreciate it.
We'll go next to Dave Griffin, Finish Line.
My question is about OnCheck-ME.
Okay.
As far as I can see, this command is still not documented, and as of about a year ago, Madison Pruitt and had made comments that it was a command intended for Informix tech support use only. Is that, and you mentioned it in your presentation there, so I wanted to confirm, is that something which is actually supported now?
Okay. It's one of these slightly sensitive areas, and I probably should have actually deleted it from the presentation, but I didn't, so we'll live with having mentioned it. In 7.3.1, OnCheck-ME is there, and basically it works. It's not something you should do too casually. You use it carefully. You want the system to be as near idle as possible when you use it.
We just lost our speaker line. Please stand by while we reconnect. Again, we have lost our speaker line. Please stand by while we reconnect.
You're online for today's IBM Chat with the Labs conference call. At this time, we're trying to reestablish our line with our speaker. Please remain online. We do appreciate your patience.
Behaving machine.
Hang on our call.
Jonathan, you're back online.
Oh, good. I'm sorry about that, people. I don't know what happened, but suddenly I was just talking to a beep. Is there any more questions, or had I finished with the previous question?
We do have more questions, and we're going to move now to Ron Bailey, Bright Cheese House.
Hi. My question involves, you mentioned the defragmenting or the fragmentation of the drives in 9.4. I'm curious as to whether or not there's any kind of new defragmenting tools, because right now it's a fairly manual setup of adjusting the table extents and setting up the initial and next chunks, and it's just a very manual process. Is there a more automated function in 9.4?
No, the process is substantially the same as in all previous versions. One of the issues with adding big chunks is that you actually, A, you have to physically enable it. So if you migrate a system from a 2 gigabyte only chunks to a big chunk system, you have to actually physically enable big chunks. You then have to add those chunks. You then have to migrate the data into those chunks. No, there aren't automatic tools to do that, which we supply. Yes, I'm afraid it's still a manual process. Yes, it's sort of on the list of things that we need to pay attention to.
Okay. Thank you.
We'll go next to Vineet Marotra with IBM.
Hey, I have one question. Is there any risk of data loss if we decide to revert back to 7.31 after upgrade to 9.4 and use it for a few days in production environment?
Okay,
and how successful it is in general?
Okay. The question is, can you revert from IDS 940 to 731, having started at 731, and the answer is yes. One of the issues that we dealt with, particularly with the large chunks support stuff, is that we knew that we needed to be able to revert. Obviously, if you've added stuff to your database system that is inherent to IDS 940, you will need to get rid of that before you can revert to 731. So, for example, we actually have three stages of operation with big chunks. There's sort of stage zero, which is no big chunks at all. Stage one is new data in new big, will be added in big chunks, but old data will be left unchanged. And then there's stage two, where new data, old data will be rewritten in the new page format. If you stick with stage 0 or stage 1 conversion, then it is still possible to revert to a previous version of the database. So if you came from 7.3.1, you can revert to 7.3.1. If you came from 9.3, you can revert to 9.3. If you do go to stage 2 of the big chunk stuff, onload minus BC2, the B and the C are both capitalized, then you are saying, I no longer need to revert. And you cannot revert back after you have activated that. But prior to doing that non-revertible step, you are able to revert to your previous version, providing that you get rid of any new features that you're using from the system. So, yes, you can still revert.
Thank you.
We'll go next to Rick Stamm with Kroger.
Yes, hello, Jonathan. Actually, we have a few questions here. One, due to Sarbanes regulations, we're looking at auditing our informant's transactions.
Okay.
We're wondering with 9.4 if the auditing capabilities might be a little more streamlined than with past versions.
Not really. They are substantially the same, so you would probably still be using the on-audit and on-show audit facilities. If that is not what you require, then you may be needing to look at the trigger operation stuff, which I mentioned, the instead of triggers on views or something like that, and we need to chat about what your particular requirements are.
Alrighty. Next question. On slide 9, in your introduction of the big chunks, we noticed that on bar was missing. Is there a particular reason why that's not on the list?
Yes, there's a particular reason. Basically, on bar works with a storage manager, and the storage manager is responsible for writing to disk or tape. So if you have a storage manager that can handle big chunks, OnBar works with big files, then OnBar works with big files. If you have a storage manager that does not work with big files, you're still stuck with small files.
All right.
So it is a deliberate omission. It probably I should mention it simply to avoid this question, but actually it's a deliberate omission.
All right, very good. Also with the... speaking of the enterprise replication, across nodes, would there be any guarantee of delivery of that transaction across the nodes?
No. ER is normally set up with asynchronous replication. HDR is the synchronous replication system. It depends exactly what you mean by guaranteed delivery. Yes, we guarantee to get the transaction across in due course.
Mm-hmm.
If you're referring to guaranteed within N seconds, the answer is no, but it's usually fairly quick if you've got your system configured sensibly.
But now, I, as far as guaranteed delivery, I just meant is what guarantee is there that the transaction would actually be executed on all the nodes involved with ER?
Okay. Basically, ER doesn't remove the transaction until it has been replicated. So, yes, it is guaranteed to get there eventually.
Okay, very good. And then my last question concerning encryption.
Mm-hmm.
The discussion seemed to be encryption between informant's nodes. Would there be some kind of decryption client that we could place out on another tier, like a tier or three-tier system? Particularly, we're using business objects, and we're interested possibly in encrypting the data being transmitted to business objects.
Okay. The encryption works, the encryption that I'm talking about this time, works between the database server and ESQRC or ODBC or JDBC or ... the various client programs. Is not something that the application level programmer has to worry about. Now, in the case of something like business objects, it's probably using either ODBC or one of the other Microsoft-based access methods of getting at the data, and the drivers that you're using would eventually call down onto our communications layer, the ASF, which I mentioned, and that ASF layer deals with the encryption for you. So business objects just needs to be configured with a connection that is set up saying, I need to use encryption. And as long as the configuration in SQL hosts or the equivalent says that this connection is encrypted, the data will be transferred between the bottom layers underneath business objects to the database server in encrypted format, and business objects will get to see the data in the clear. Does that answer your question?
Yes, indeed it does. Thank you very much.
Okay.
We'll go next to Richard Tobin, Rowan Companies.
And my question has to do with validating users. We have a mixed network with Windows and Unix, and Informix runs on Unix, and the users run on Windows. Currently, we have to have a user account on the Unix system to have users validated. Are there any plans, or is it even possible now to have the users validated on the through the Windows side so that they can just connect and do their thing?
Okay. It's a complicated area, and it's not one which I actually covered in the talk. There is a facility on Unix called PAM, Pluggable Authentication Modules, and IDS 940 plays with PAM. I can use PAM. And if you have on the Unix system, you have the ability to authenticate Windows users through a pluggable module, then we can be or IDS can be configured to use that for authenticating your Windows users. We are improving that support in 9.5 so that it will be better available on Windows as well, but it's somewhat dependent on the operating system support or getting third-party support through PAM. But the facility is available in 9.40 subject to the operating system supporting PAM as well.
Thank you very much.
We'll go next to Tom Howard.
I've got several questions as well. The first one has to do with the dynamic locks and dynamic logs.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you just have to prep ahead of time, make sure you got enough space and everything, and once it adds it, it's just as if you had added it manually?
Basically, yes. For the locks, then obviously the next time the server is restarted, the lock configuration will default back to whatever it says in the onconfig file. If you run out of locks, it will add them again next time. It would probably be a good idea to keep an eye on whether your current set of locks is bigger than the set in the onconfig file so that you can adjust your onconfig file appropriately. With dynamic logs, it's mostly a question of making sure you have some free space somewhere on your system. This is generally a good idea. And the logs are added. Once they're added, they're there. The on spaces utility, unless I'm mixing them up, can be used to add and drop logical logs and deal with them. There's one of the command line utilities can deal with adding log or removing extra logs that were added after you've backed them up and so on. So yes, the logs are there automatically. They're added as needed, and you can configure whether dynamic logs with a G are added or not, and how much they're added and so on. Locks will be added automatically, and as far as I know, you can't stop us from adding them.
Okay, thank you. Next question has to do with the statement cache.
Mm-hmm.
Just curiosity, does that also work for unprepared statements?
Yes, it works for statements, whatever comes across the wire.
So it's not something just where if the program prepares a statement, even if the program just executes and, you know, it's an uninformed developer that doesn't prepare the statement?
Okay. For most practical purposes, there's no difference at the server side. So actually, it doesn't matter. Yes, both types.
Okay. And the last question is maybe if you could take a minute to touch on 32-bit versus 64-bit. We have many, many servers that are a gig or less of memory total.
Mm-hmm.
And so from the standpoint of memory use, there's not any benefit to going to 64. Is there any other benefits going to 64? And is there any hint that sometime in the near future we would be encouraged not to be on a 32-bit Informix?
Okay. If you're dealing with small systems, and by definition, if you're dealing with less than a gigabyte of memory, that is within this context a small system, then 32-bit's fine. It will continue to be around for the foreseeable future. Current generation of Pentiums, et cetera, aren't going to go away for another 5 to 10 years. 32-bit IDS will be around for at least that long. I can't predict what will happen in 5 years, but there's been no discussion of dropping 32-bit IDS anywhere in the 5-year timeline that we currently have, and frankly, I don't expect it to be a subject for discussion for another at least 5 years. No, it won't even start raising its head for that long. So is there any performance benefits of going to 64-bit in your small systems? Possibly. It's certainly not clear-cut, and I wouldn't worry about staying with 32-bit for the time being. And my foreseeable future is about 5 years, and you aren't going to have any problems in that time scale that I can think of.
Okay. And the final question is, do you know of any gotchas or anything to really be concerned about if going from 731 to the 94 family?
We have struggled to eliminate as many of them as possibly can. The area which might be of some concern is if you're doing some sorts of queries between inter-database queries, distributed queries. Especially if you're interrogating the system catalog, you can run into problems. It's an area which we're doing work on for 9.5, and there's more work still to be done even after 9.5. But if you're running in a single database at a time, then there are very, very few gotchas. I think there was one that we came across, and I think it's actually fixed in 9.4, but it was a problem in earlier versions, which was to do with the number of parameters you could have in a single stored procedure. So if you were passing more than 300-something parameters into a stored procedure, A, what were you doing in the first place, and B, you could run into problems. But it's at that sort of level of esoteric problem. The basic, ordinary, sane mortals do not run into problems.
Jonathan, one thing we might want to mention, though, is many system administrators do have scripts that query the system catalogs to pick up table names or column names for different reasons, and yes, those they will need to look at if they're using, you know, grep and awk, because now that we support long names, positionally that output will have changed significantly.
Yeah, that's Christine is bringing up a very good point. One of the features that I didn't mention but that was added in version 9.2.0, as far as I recall, 9.2.1 at the very latest, was the ability to have long identifiers. Usernames, instead of being restricted to 8 characters, can go up to 32 characters, and object names, table names, and such like, can go up to 128 characters long. So that means that if you accidentally use one of those long names, you may have problems with tracking outputs from utilities that report on these names. And you need to be aware of that in your client programs. If you're preparing statements, your object names may be longer than they were before. Another change that happens as a result of the big chunk functionality is that the format of disk addresses is different, because the disk addresses are bigger. So if you've got scripts that are analyzing disk addresses and things, you may need to worry about that. But that's about it.
Okay, thank you.
As a reminder, star 1 on your touchtone phone for questions or comments. We have a follow-up question, Vineet Mehrotra with IBM.
Hey, I have a question. What will happen to upgrade process if any application user tries to connect to the server at that time? And is there a foolproof mechanism available to avoid that kind of scenarios?
Okay, I think the question is, during an upgrade, can you stop users connecting to the database? Is that roughly what you're asking?
Yeah, like if by any chance, like even though we communicated to the user and shut off the application, what is still if they are able to connect to the, like somebody initiates a connection?
Okay. In 940, there is no special facility available to stop users. So once the upgrade process is running, and the server comes up as a multi-user server, it is available for people to use. In IDS 9.5, we will have a feature called single-user mode, when you bring a server up in single-user mode, only user Informix can connect to the database server at all. So only Informix can administer the stuff, and Informix is assumed to be under your control. If you're using Informix for everybody to connect to the database, time you went on my paranoid DBA course. But that's 9.50. In 9.40, there is no special features to stop a user connecting to the database once the database upgrade has occurred. However, normally people have sufficient controls in place that it's not too much of a problem. I appreciate that it's not a perfect solution. Key thing, point is that once the database server is up and migrated, it is capable of running and dealing with user transactions. The only issue is, what do you want to do as an administrator once the database server is ready to before you're ready for the clients to connect? And we don't have any extra help in 940 to keep the users out of the system for you. That's coming in 950.
If we change the port number at the server, will that help? And my question was is upgrade process will be affected? Like if some user with their own IDs tries to connect to the server at that time, or will it be just keep on going without affecting anything?
Basically, the upgrade will occur and will be complete before any users are allowed in at all. By the time the users could connect and get into the system, the system is, in its own terms, ready for use.
Okay.
So there's no particular problem. The only issue is if you need to do administrative work after the upgrade is complete by Informix's internal standards, then you might still want to keep the users out, and there is no mechanism to do that in the existing version.
Yeah, that's okay. Yeah, that I understand.
Okay. But the upgrade itself, I mean, you can kick the users off. So when you're using the old system, for sake of argument, 731, you have to take the system down offline, and you may have to be firm with your users to get them off the system. But once the system is down, there's nothing to connect to. When you bring it up under the new system, the system will do the in-place changes it needs to make before allowing anybody to connect to it. When it allows people to connect, it's ready for use. So it's almost a non-question. It's or non-issue, unless you're trying to do administrative work after the upgrade is complete.
Okay.
Thank you.
As a reminder, star 1 for questions or comments. We'll go next to Carl Berner in Jenico.
Yes. Hi, Jonathan. The question I have is the high-performance loader.
Mm-hmm.
And I was wondering, I've also used the 8.x version back in 1999.
Okay.
And I love the parallel loader, which
right.
is much easier to use and quicker. You don't have to use the GUI.
Right.
Is there any time to bring that in, or?
Yes, it is very much under consideration, but it's bad news is it's for 9.next, not for 9.50. There is the IP load stuff, there is on PLADM, and there is some documentation how to drive things from the command line, but it's not particularly easy, and that remains true, so it's it's not as easy to set up. Done, you make yet another customer who wants it, it improves its priority, but it's not there yet.
Okay, thank you.
Having no further questions, Jonathan, I'll turn it back to you for any additional or closing comments.
Okay, well, I'd like to say thank you very much to all of you for joining this call and listening and for the questions you've asked. I hope I've given you the answers you needed. I have nothing further to say. Thank you very much. Good day.
This will conclude today's conference. Thank you for your participation. You may now disconnect.